Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Cancer. It's a horrible disease that drastically uproots families and radically changes lives. This hardship is worsened when parents are forced to cope with the diagnosis of cancer in their young children. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Monday edition of Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and over the next 3 days, you're going to hear from moms and dads whose children were diagnosed with cancer at a very young age. On today's broadcast, Dr. Dobson will ask these families to share the real struggles they've faced after receiving this shocking news, and why loneliness is such an issue for parents in this extremely difficult situation. Here now is part one of Hope in the Midst of Childhood Cancer on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Today, we want to take a compassionate look at this disease, particularly the disease of cancer with all of its ramifications. And to do that, we've invited a few folks here to share their personal experiences of pain and hope in caring for a seriously ill child. And we are very pleased to have them here. This program today was suggested by my good friend Charlie Renfro. He called one day and said, this is something I think you ought to do. And I agreed with him completely, and we've been working on it for a number of months now. And with that, let me introduce our guest. To my right is Nikki Hampton. Nikki and her husband Terry have 3 children, including Coulter, who at 8 years of age suffered from complications of bone marrow transplant and went on to be with the Lord on March of 2005. He actually contracted the disease when he was 18 months of age, so he suffered for it almost all of his young life. Next to Nikki is Tony Rockhill. Tony and her husband Vic have 6 children ranging from 14 to 22. In 2001, Tony's daughter Christian was diagnosed with acute lymphocytic leukemia at the age of 13. She went into complete remission in 2004 but relapsed just this past October. We're also blessed to have Corey Hobbs, whose daughter Natalie, at the age of 5, was also diagnosed with the same disorder of leukemia in 2001. And thankfully, she was declared cancer-free in October of 2003. Corey and his wife Kelly have 3 children. And finally, we are very pleased to have Melinda Maton, who worked as a nurse in pediatric oncology for several years before starting a ministry to children with cancer and their families. That ministry is called the Lighthouse Family Retreat. And Melinda has poured her life into that since 1999. It serves children with cancer and their families. And this retreat is located very near the beach. And I'm just very proud of Melinda, and we'll let her describe her ministry after we've met the first 3 families. With that, Nikki, I am going to turn the first question to you. How did the diagnosis that your little boy Coulter had cancer come to you?
We had been taking Coulter for physical therapy and occupational therapy due to some complications at birth. And I was just lucky enough that our pediatrician's wife was our physical therapist. And he had little spots on his ankles, little purple pinpoint dots, which are petechiae. But at the time, I didn't know that. And being a first-time mom, I kept buying him bigger and bigger socks, and he still had purple spots. And, you know, I thought, oh, my terrible mom, you know, this poor baby, his elastic on his socks is too tight, you know. And I had gone to therapy one day, and she slid his socks off to do some work with him, and she said, "What are these?" And I said, "I don't know. I said, I keep trying to buy him bigger socks, but they don't go away." And she looked at me, and she said, "I think we need to go next door and see Marty," who was her husband and our pediatrician. And when we got there, he didn't say anything directly to me, of course. He was being professional. He said, "Why don't you go get some blood work done and then come see me this afternoon after lunch?" He said, "Go get some lunch with Coulter and then come back and we'll talk about what they say." And I was naive enough not to worry. You know, it was Dr. Michaels. He was our friend. And he said, "Don't worry." And I wasn't going to worry. And when we came back, his platelet count was low. And from there, we were sent to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, the Scottish Rite campus, and we met with Dr. Boudreau. And his diagnosis wasn't apparent at first. It took several years before we got this specific diagnosis of aplastic anemia with dyskeratosis congenita. And that became apparent when his fingernails and toenails fell off.
And that was the beginning of a very long and painful journey.
Yes.
How well do you remember, and I'm sure you do, the day that the diagnosis was confirmed? What was that like for you?
Oh, I remember it vividly. Absolutely vividly. I remember I was by myself, and I had taken Coulter to the doctor, and of course my husband Terry was at work, and our other daughter was at preschool. And Atlanta traffic is terrible. For anybody who's been in Atlanta traffic, we all know how hideous it is, you know. And of course it was raining, which made it all that much worse. And I remember her telling me, and I remember not having any reaction sort of while I was there, just sort of, it went over my head. I remember her saying the words, I remember being in the room, I remember what things smelled like, but it was like shock. It was like, oh, okay, you know, okay, well, we'll deal with that, okay. And then by the time I got into the parking lot, it was starting to sink in, and by the time I was on I-75 going north in the rain, it really sank in, and I thought, you know, I'm going to have to tell my husband when I get home that our little boy is dying. You know, how
did they tell you that in stark terms?
Not outright, but it was implied that the dyskeratosis congenita is so rare. There's only like 8 people in America who have ever had it. They don't know how to treat it. They don't know what to do for it. And it was just sort of, we're going to be winging it.
Yeah.
In a nice way, of course. They didn't.
There was
just
no
look at,
chemotherapy for
not,
that treatment.
Not to start off. There was no plan. Like patients with leukemia or a solid tumor, they say, here's the plan. You'll have 3 weeks of this and you'll have 4 weeks of that and you'll get a week of remission. There was no plan. There was, we'll take it day by day and we'll see how Coulter does and we'll do the best we can with what we have to work with.
Have you always thought of yourself as a strong woman?
No. Coulter made me strong. I would not have ordered a pizza by myself before I had Coulter. But, you know, when you have children, they don't tell you when you have children that you become a mama bear and your claws come out and you would just do anything you could to help your children. And I came out of myself. And my husband jokes, he says, "You are not the girl I married." You know, absolutely not. And I'm not. And it's the truth. But he gave me the courage and the strength to say what I needed to do and to overcome my fears and to put my fears aside and say, here's what Coulter needs. Here's what I need to do for Coulter, and he comes first.
They tell me that loneliness is often one of the characteristics of families that go through this, the sense of being the only person or seeming to be the only person in the whole world.
Absolutely.
Who has ever experienced anything like that. That's not true, obviously, but you feel that way.
You do feel that way, absolutely. And and I think because when you're in the hospital and when you're in the clinic, it's almost a subculture. And you might laugh when I say that, but we have our own language. We have our own set of rituals. We have our own little lifestyle. And once you leave the hospital and you leave that clinic, you go back to the quote-unquote real world. And it's almost like you don't know how to function with regular people because you can't speak that language. You can't say aplastic anemia, dyskeratosis congenita. You cannot say the name of the drug, the dose, or the frequency, or anything without your friends just absolutely glazing over and going, oh, okay.
You also can't share with them their experiences, such as we're going to take a vacation next summer, and we're going to be gone for 2 weeks. We're going to take a road trip in a camper. There's no such thing.
No, and if you dare to leave, if you dare to venture outside the 1 hour radius of the hospital, you know, it's fearful because you don't know how they're going to do while you're gone. And to actually go somewhere is a major scheduling
event.
And
you never get away from it.
And then it's not escapable.
Yeah. Okay, Tony, tell us your story.
Christian was always an incredibly active little girl, and in fact, we homeschooled our children for most of their education experience, but when she was in the third grade, she actually went to school, and she was such a little go-getter that her teacher renamed her Scrappy. And so she was always incredibly active. She was a dancer and a competitive dancer. She played softball, basketball, and also had just begun swimming on a competitive swim team. And we, at the time as a family, one of the jobs that we had, we were cleaning, and Christian had her own little chore to do. And while we were there, I started noticing that she was bending with her back straight and going to the side. So, and she never complained. And I asked her once, "Christian, you know, why can't you bend over? What's going on?" And she said, "I don't know. I think I hurt my back." Well, she was at that time involved in her swim team, and they practice 6 days a week. And so her swim coach in 1 week had to pull her out twice because she couldn't swim. He also was a chiropractor, so he said that he really felt like that she had probably pulled a muscle. So he worked with her for almost a month, and the pain was getting so bad in her back that she couldn't get off the couch. So he sent us to another chiropractor in Atlanta who did deep tissue manipulation instead of bone manipulation. So he worked with us for, I want to say, about 2 weeks and sent us home and said she'll be 100% in a few days. She got worse. So I called the swim coach and talked to him about it. And he said, you know, why don't you take her to her pediatrician and see if there's an underlying reason why she's not getting better? And so we took her to our pediatrician, and they did all the blood work and everything, and told us that they felt like that she either had rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. So they sent us to a specialist at Emory in Atlanta. So we went to Emory, just Christian and I, because we felt like that we were going to go and they were going to give us an antibiotic and send us home because the child had never been sick before. And so...
She was 13.
She was 13 years old. Yes. So I took her to the specialist office at Emory. And while we were there, the doctor kept getting called out of the office. And she called me out. She asked if she could speak to me, you know, by ourselves. And we went to her office, and she told me the reason she kept leaving the office is because she was conferring with my pediatrician and also with the lab work, what we had already gotten done. And she had drawn her on and told me that it was conclusive that Christian had leukemia. And I remember when she said that, I felt like my chest, that somebody had just pushed me back, and the whole room was like closing in on me. And
you understood what you were dealing
with. Yes, I did. And she told me, these were her words. She said, I said, "Exactly what does this mean?" And she said, "It means you're looking at a year of hell if she makes it."
Oh.
And so having six kids, you become friends with your pediatrician. And so I called our pediatrician and I told her, you know, what the specialist said. And she was absolutely appalled, you know, that she told me that. But come the end of the first year, I honestly gave God glory for telling me that, because everything we went through, I kept comparing it to hell. And I thought, Lord, we're not there yet. And so it was really hard. But anyway, she was on chemotherapy. I tell everybody, and she wrote this in her little novel that she wrote in for her school project, that the first pill that she ever swallowed was a chemotherapy drug.
My. How did your husband cope with it, Tony?
At the time, his job was incredibly demanding. And he knew that I was at the doctor's office with Christian. And when we got back in the van to go over to Eggleston, it's the campus that we went to of Children's Health Care of Atlanta, before I could talk to him, I had to talk to Christian because she's right in the van with me.
Yeah.
And so we got in the van, and she knew that something was horribly wrong with her because she was in incredible pain. I mean, just incredible pain. And she said, we got in the van, and she said, "Mama, did they tell you what was wrong with me?" And I said, yeah, the doctor told me.
Were you crying?
No. No, I wasn't crying. And she wrote in her little book, she said, my mom was trying to be really strong, but I could tell she was really upset. Mm. And so I said, yeah, she told me, you know, what was wrong. And she said, well, what is it? And I remember saying, Christian, do you really want to know? And she said, yeah, I do. And I said, you have leukemia. And she said, she was looking at me. She didn't cry. She just said, does that mean I'm going to die? And I told her, I said, Christian, you know, we're going to do everything that we can to have you here with us. But, you know, we know something that the medical community don't. And I said, we have a hope in the Lord. You know, we're going to put our trust in him, and we're going to believe what he says about us. You know, his report is good, and we're going to believe that report. And we drove over to Eggleston. I called my husband then, Vic, and he was at work, and I told him that we found out what the diagnosis was, and could he just leave work and come over to Eggleston Hospital? And he said, can you tell me what it is? And I said, Christian's in the car with me. I didn't want to cry in front of her and break down. And I said, she has leukemia, and we're going straight to Eggleston. And so he met us over there, and I called my mom and dad, and his mom and dad, and they all met us over at the hospital. But when we went in, you know, the oncologist on the pediatric floor, he was aware of what the other doctor had told us, and he said, I want to tell you something. He said, every child that comes through those double doors, he said, I look at them, and I say, they're the ones. They're the ones that are going to beat this.
Tony, as you well know, being 13 is itself a tremendous challenge.
Yes.
But just starting to grow up and all the social pressures and all the self-doubt and all the, you know, the aspects of the hormonal changes you're going through and everything, that is very, very difficult. But to have to cope with the reality, the prospect of death, and not an easy one either at that time, is almost too cruel. Isn't it?
Yes, it is. And the thing about Christian was she's never complained. And I think that most of the kids with cancer, I think we can all agree that they're just incredibly strong, strong kids. And all of our friends and family, you know, when they would ask Christian, and you could look at her and tell, obviously, she wasn't feeling well. Mm-hmm. But you would say, Christian, how are you doing? And her pat answer till today is, I'm good. I'm good.
Well, you're revealing the wonderful unfolding of the story, because Kristen is now 17, and she is no longer in remission,
right?
Which she was for a couple of years. But you had some good news just today.
Just today on the way in, Nikki and I were driving from the airport in Denver, and my husband called me and said that we had good news. All of our other children were tested to be typed to see if there was a bone marrow transplant, because the only way our doctor would consider it, if there was a perfect match within the sibling group. And I'm not sure exactly why. But today coming in, my husband called, and they were coming home from the hospital, my daughter and husband. And he said, we got some news. He said, we have a perfect match. It's little Vic. Little Vic's 22 years old. 6'6". He's a huge boy. But I want to tell you what he said. I was sharing with Melinda and them, that, and he didn't know that, you know, he was going to be the match. But when Christian relapsed, he had came home on the weekend to see her, and he's this big old boy, and he got down on his knees. Christian was on the couch, and he grabbed her hand. He said, Christian, Mama told me that you may need my bone marrow to get well. Mm. And he said, if you need it, you can have all of it.
Oh, man.
And he said, and if you need my kidneys, you can have those too. And he said, if you need my heart, you can have it too. And he said, by the time they get finished with you, you're going to be more of me than they are of you.
Oh, my God. The Does that surprise you about him? Is that characteristic of him?
Yeah, they love each other. Yeah. You know, the siblings, I have, like I said, six kids, and they're all 8 years apart. And, you know, of course, they have times where they rub on each other, but they have an incredible sense of humor and sense of love for each other.
Well, Tony, I'm going to ask our listeners to continue in prayer.
Thank you.
For Christian and for you and your husband. And we will follow with great interest and concern the progress there. And I ask you to keep us informed. We want to hear more about it in the next program. And this is one of those broadcasts where we've got many guests and not enough time. Corey, we're going to have to start your story and then Melinda, yours, and we'll pick it up next time. But just give us the, you know, the rough outline of what you've been through.
Natalie, who was 5 years old at the time, was my middle daughter, and we still think it's a miracle that when, even though all that's real bad, I think there was a lot of positive that we got out of this. But we went to a pediatrician, and we're going in for the well baby check on my younger son, and Natalie just had to be with mom at the time. And she'd been going through some, like, fatigue issues and kind of being a little bit, I want to say, pulled back from kids in the neighborhood. And we didn't think a whole lot of it at the time, just thought maybe he's going through some changes. But when she got there, the doctor saw my wife Kelly walk in with her, and she was seeing Andrew. She said, you know, Natalie doesn't look exactly like I think she should look. I'd like to see her when we get done with Andrew. And she said, fine. So she went back there, and she took her back there, she did a little quick hemoglobin in test inside the office. And she didn't tell us at the time, but she knew right away what it was. Her hemoglobin was dangerously low at like 5.0, where normal is supposed to be 12. So they sent her, just like they told Nikki, we're going to send you for some tests over at the hospital. And we went over to the hospital, or Kelly did. And then they came back to the doctor. She said, just go do what you need to do. When the results come in, I'll tell you exactly what's going on. And the results came in, and she told Kelly, head on down to Scottish Rite at Children's Hospital. You need to go down there and see the Scottish Rite people. And right then, Kelly knew something was up. Now, I'm at work all this time, and unbeknownst to all this to me, but she called me, let me know that we got to take down to the hospital. And she said she thought it was leukemia. Nobody had ever told her that. And I can just remember just sitting there, just hearing that. And having to deal with your own mortality is hard enough at a younger age, much less having to deal with your child's mortality. I can just remember going, like, we're fixing to lose a child. You know, I'm not even know how I could handle me or my wife going away, much less my child going away. And there are just a huge flood of emotions go through. And being the dad, you're supposed to be the protector, the rallier, make sure everything's okay, you know, most to make it all happen. And I'm still in that stage that you think you're in control, but you're really not. And I didn't learn that till later on. But at the time, you're just trying to reach for everything. And you get mad at everybody, and you start looking for reasons and everything. But anyway, we got down to Scottish Rite, and they found out that we had ALL and everything. So from that point on, it was just the journey and the protocols that come with it and everything.
Almost
so
we day by day.
Day by
after
day,
that.
Yes,
you know, I think one of the most difficult aspects of a disease like this is waiting for the lab test to come back.
Sure.
There's nothing you can do but wait, and there's all this anxiety.
Helpless.
And then when you eventually get the bad news, it's devastating. There's so much more I want to hear. We haven't even talked about the role that faith played, the relationship to the Lord in these three families. I'm sure that's been the centerpiece. That's been why you're
absolutely
able
true
to sit here and talk about it,
yes,
today. And we want to hear about that. And then, Melinda, I am very anxious to have you tell our listeners about the wonderful program that you have to reach out to these families. It's one of the best things I've seen. It's not large enough to treat the whole country or to help every family out there that's dealing with cancer, but you do what you can, and you're to be
that's
commended
right
for it. And
yes,
we want to hear about it next time. In fact, all three of these families have been touched by you and
yes
your
surely
ministry. With that, we're going to have to close out today. I feel bad about that because we have these folks here, and you know, 30 minutes is 30 minutes. So thank you all, and we will look forward to hearing the rest of the story next. Not probably not the rest of the story, more of the story next
thank you
time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson.
What incredible testimonies shared here today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Now, if you're listening to us right now and can relate to the pain of losing a loved one to cancer, or you're battling through a deadly disease, we would love to hear from you and to pray with you. Please call our offices here in Colorado at 877-732-6825, and one of our representatives will pray with you and help you find resources to get you through life's storm. Again, our number is 877-732-6825. You can also get in touch with us online by emailing us contact@myfamilytalk.com. That's simply the word contact@myfamilytalk.com. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening to today's broadcast, and thanks for your constant support of this ministry. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow to hear part two of this interview on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.